But welcome to the conference, as Amity explained. One of the things that we wanted to do is just let you know that later on there will be opportunities for people to speak, and you can unmute your line and then mute it after you ask a question or make a comment. Lori, the director of the Ombudsman Resource Center, will be helping us manage the chat feature and collecting questions and information from you. We will answer just as many as we possibly can and have comments and some give and take. We will try to capture the others and maybe make some responses following the call. What I wanted to let you know also is that we hope to make this as interactive as possible, given the format that it's a webinar and it's being recorded. The agenda that you received as part of the materials for this call, you can review that, and it'll let you know that obviously we're going to talk about culture change applied to our daily advocacy as ombudsman. We'll have an introduction to just kind of what this is in terms of what part of culture change we're talking about today. We'll look at similarities in the Foundations for Culture Change and the Foundation for Your Ombudsman Work, as well as the Nursing Home Reform Law and the requirements for nursing facilities. We also will look at two cases, and I hope that you've all downloaded the materials and have given them some thought and have come to the call with some ideas about how you can incorporate culture change ideas and terminology in advocacy on behalf of the residents in the two cases, because we will have some discussion about that. Following the case discussion, Amity's going to walk us through some ways to really look at culture change with your ombudsman data and see what the next steps may be that you take. Then we'll have some time for questions and answers discussion, and we'll wrap up with some resources. I want to let you all know that today we're not assuming that we have all the knowledge and you don't, and that we're teaching you anything vastly new. What we want to do is really focus in on a few key principles that apply to your daily advocacy work and give you opportunity to think about how you're incorporating those in the way you think and the way you talk with residents as well as with facilities and family members. We know that many of you have been very involved in culture change practices for quite a long time. So another call later in the year will focus on some of the ways that your ombudsman programs have been dealing with culture change. Some of you have done some really outstanding practices with incorporating culture change on the regional level in your individual advocacy as well as your systems advocacy. And then others have really made a lot of headway in finding good ways to integrate culture change into your ombudsman training. So our next call will be the applications of how you've actually integrated this in your ombudsman practice and training opportunities. But today we want to focus on just kind of jump-starting us all with kind of a common approach and a way of looking at our ombudsman work through the lens of culture change. So with that, I'll turn it over to Amity.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, so to get us started, let's get to the next slide. I want to help us start thinking about individualized resident-directed care. So I'd like you to consider the following questions. You don't need to respond to us directly. Just rather spend a couple moments thinking about your response to the following questions. So, for instance, when considering your morning routine, what do you do first? What is your favorite part of your morning? And finally, what do you do on a daily basis that provides you with comfort, joy, a sense of identity, purpose, and/or security? With those responses in mind, to try to make this interactive, as Sarah said, we'd like to do a quick poll question. So respond to the following poll question by clicking on your answer and hitting submit. Do residents tell you that they miss their daily pleasures? Excellent. Well, we're pretty close to everyone responding. So to show you the results, an overwhelming amount of yeses, 89%. Well, now 88%. So thank you for responding. And perhaps for the almost 12% that said that residents don't tell you that they miss their daily pleasures, perhaps this is a question that we should start asking, because culture change, after all, is about making care individualized and resident-directed. So I would believe that most residents, or some residents in that 12% of you that responded, probably maybe don't think that they have the right to complain or even miss their daily pleasures because they are so institutionalized at this point. So with your responses regarding your personal morning routine and the type of questions and complaints that you receive from residents in mind, the underlying question when delving into culture change truly is, how do we organize our systems around the people who live and work in long-term care to enhance the quality of life? In general, to implement culture change, there are what we consider culture change practices that we'll discuss further along in this presentation. Culture change is a transformation in philosophy and practice to deinstitutionalize care and create a resident-directed approach in all aspects of life and long-term care. Culture change also includes changing how ombudsmen communicate with residents, families, and providers. And I'll discuss that a little bit further in a couple slides down. Ombudsmen, as you know, like Sarah said, we're not probably giving you brand new information, but you know that you're already deeply committed to culture change in a variety of ways. For example, some ombudsmen, both state and local ombudsmen, are involved in statewide or regional culture change coalitions that often include other advocates, surveyors, residents, family members, and providers. Building coalitions and partnerships are crucial in order to provide education regarding culture change, sharing best practices, and encouraging providers to implement culture change practices. However, we do understand that ombudsmen are extremely busy and are often already spread very thin between regular case investigations and routine visits. So today, as Sarah stated, we're going to focus on how to support culture change practices during the daily advocacy that you're already doing in order to enhance the complaint resolution process with a goal of resident-directed care as the outcome. Often when we discuss culture change, people immediately think of the environmental changes to deinstitutionalized facilities. Those are the most visible changes, the most obvious changes. And yes, environmental changes are very important, but they often cost money. And environmental changes are truly only one example of culture change practices that are really a step along the culture change journey to change the entire philosophy of care. Some examples of environmental changes that you may already be aware of are removing the nurse's station and replacing it perhaps with some low tables that are more accessible and more open to the residents and the other people that come and visit the facility, less separation between the staff and the residents, using actual diningware and cloth napkins rather than trays and plastic utensils, introducing plants and pets. And we don't just mean having one dog or cat for the whole facility, but also having residents care for their own pets in their own rooms. Create smaller neighborhoods with 10 to 15 residents rather than having long institutional wings or hallways. Culture change practices are designed to empower the residents, support resident rights, and change the institutionalized system of care to resident-directed care. For this presentation, we'll focus on the true meaning of the culture change philosophy, which is resident-directed care and how you can incorporate these philosophies. Especially, as you know, during this time of significant fiscal restraints, we need to emphasize the basics of culture change as resident-directed care and resident rights. And unlike environmental changes, those changes are often no cost or low cost. So those changes are geared to changing the institutional care to resident-directed care. And some examples of that would be truly individualized care plans, including residents in the hiring process and training process of staff, including residents in community dietary decisions, and perhaps implementing consistent staff assignment, which we'll discuss a little bit later. So I said I would touch on culture change, including communication. Word choice is very important, but oftentimes overlooked. Changing the way ombudsmen communicate in order to model communication for providers and others is an important first step in culture change in resident-directed care. Most of you probably already use resident-centered or person-first language, but it's worth mentioning again. So to give you a couple examples, which I'm sure you're aware of, would be the most obvious institutional language would be patient, and resident-centered language would be resident, client, neighbor, friend, or just calling that individual by what they want to be called by, whether it's first name, last name. Institutional language would be calling residents that walk around wanderers instead of people who like to walk, and making that a strength instead of a weakness. So those are just a couple examples, and the rest information you can review later. So now we'll go back to Sarah.
Thanks, Amity. This
Thank you.
Quote by Dr. Fleming, who is commissioner of AOA. Our nation has been conducting investigations, passing new laws, and issuing new regulations relative to nursing homes at a rapid rate during the past few years. All of this activity will be of little avail unless our communities are organized in such a manner, in such a way that new laws and new regulations are utilized to deal with the individual complaints of older persons who are living in nursing homes. The individual in the nursing home is powerless if the laws and regulations are not being applied to him, her or to him. They might just as well not have been passed or issued. We put this slide in because it seems to us to be the real intersection of ombudsman work and the core principles of culture change. Dr. Fleming had this as part of a speech, and then it came out as part of a technical assistance memorandum from the Administration on Aging back at the very inception of the ombudsman program. He was viewing this as a reason why the ombudsman program was very necessary. And in a nutshell, it's to make sure that all of the laws and good care practices and principles that are should be upheld really apply to the individual who needs that care and is living in the facility. So from the very beginning, the ombudsman program was designed and intended to function to help the individual receive all the benefits that they should. And I think that really embodies the core of culture change principles as well. So what we're talking about, as we've mentioned before, is not a whole new way of working for ombudsmen. It's refining the tools that you have and your approaches to really bring these two streams, the ombudsman advocacy and all the things that are being learned and discussed and good practices through the Culture Change and Pioneer Network, and integrate that into your practice and your way of thinking and approach. One of the things that we wanted to look at quickly is how the Older Americans Act, the ombudsman provisions there, relate to culture change core principles, and then you see OBRA, the Nursing Home Reform Law, how that relates to some of the culture change principles. It really gives you excellent tools and, I think, some more confidence in your approach as ombudsman when you see that it's just echoed in a lot of other places. You see at the beginning where it talks about the ombudsman is to support community efforts to improve long-term care. And, of course, you are there to be advocates. But this one, the resolving problems by representing the interest of the resident, is just kind of the core principle there. And then you look at the culture change principles. It's providing information. Well, that's what ombudsmen have been about since day one, but it's also talking about culture change and resident-directed care. That's the same thing that you have been dealing with for many years in terms of what does the individual resident want and trying to resolve things to the satisfaction of the resident. Another one of the principles of culture change is collaborating with others for widespread change and to promote culture change as systems advocacy. And already as ombudsman, you've been working on systems advocacy and making systems change and trying to bring the voice of the resident to the fore. So there's a lot of similarity. just with the foundation in the Older Americans Act of the program. When you look at some of the requirements in the Nursing Home Reform Law, which we call OBRA for shorthand, and then you look again at some of the additional culture change and pioneer principles, you see a lot of similarity in residents' rights that you've been promoting and providing a lot of education about and using as a core tenet of your advocacy. And then you look at what the culture change and pioneer principle is, that's very similar. So if you look at, under the left column, the Nursing Home Reform Law, the right to the highest practical physical, mental, and psychosocial well-being of each resident, well, to do that, you have to know each person, which is part of the culture change principles. You have to respond to the spirit as well as to the mind and body. So it's very similar in approach, a little different in terminology, but the core legal requirements that support the good practices in culture change and pioneer principles are embedded in the law. Another slide that I wanted to look at is a few more provisions and a few more residents' rights. The right to participate in community activities, the right to be informed and participate in care planning and to make decisions regarding care, the right to receive appropriate and adequate care. That kind of goes back to Dr. Fleming's quote that if we have all these laws and regulations, but they don't really apply to the person who's the recipient of the care, then the laws really aren't doing any good at all. If you look at the pioneer principles, it's talking about the community as antidote to institutionalization. And over here, it's the right to participate in community activities, putting the person before the task. Once again, know each person. And ombudsmen have been talking about being fully informed, participating in care planning, making decisions, more than just a rubber stamp process. And if you have been using the care planning process as a real communication tool to try to have staff, family, and residents talking with each other and deciding how to achieve what the resident really would like to achieve and to do it in a way that upholds good care practices and maintains or improves functioning. And there again, that's those kinds of things are embedded in culture change and the pioneer principles. So there's a lot of similarities in what you've been talking about and promoting and the heart of culture change principles. Amity, I'm going to turn it back to you to go through some of the other principles that we wanted to discuss.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, before we start the case discussion, we wanted to share this quote with you as we do realize that the overall goal of actually attaining resident-directed care through these culture change practices can be daunting, especially when you're seeing just regular routine complaints that seem to should have long-term fixes, but they keep coming up and reoccurring. So ombudsmen who have embarked on culture change initiatives have found that the effort needs to be comprehensive and long-term and yet needs to be approached in a manageable step-by-step process. We hope to illustrate a step-by-step way to include culture change principles and practices in your complaint resolution process in order to create lasting change and hopefully reduce the number of recurring complaints that you receive. And we'll discuss that a little bit later when we talk about chronic complaints. So for case discussion, to give you an idea of how this is going to go, I'm going to review the first case for you, and Sarah will take the second one. But first, we'll read the cases out loud, even though you did receive those last week, and then ask you to share some resolution strategies that you've considered. In order to respond, please click the icon that says raise your hand on your computer screen, and we will call on you as we see hands raised, and then we'll remind you to unmute your phone. So if you plan on speaking, you may want to write down right now to unmute your line. You'll want to hit *7, but please do not unmute your line until we call your name. And then to mute your line once you're done, it's *6. So I would like to read the first case to you. And unfortunately, we did catch that we The case on the screen is actually a little bit different than the one that you received in your email last week. So let me read the case that you received, and then we will change the screen for you. So when the webinar is posted on the website, you'll have it, and it'll match. During a routine visit to Stony Brook Nursing and Rehab, several residents tell you that the food is often cold. You speak with other residents who are also dissatisfied with the food temperatures and would like more than one alternative meal choice. Due to the number of complaints about food, you visit with the resident council president, Ms. Jackson. Ms. Jackson says that complaints regarding the food temperature, lack of choice, and small servings have been reoccurring complaints in the last few months. Ms. Jackson said the administrator promises to address their complaints, but it's only better for a week or so and then goes back to normal. So as Sarah said before, this is a lot of information. I'm sure you receive these types of complaints on a regular basis, so you probably have a good idea of how you would resolve it. And when we asked in the handout last week, we asked you to consider perhaps some culture change principles and practices in coming up with a resolution strategy. So I see that Carolyn has her hand raised. Carolyn, if you'll go ahead and unmute your line, we'd love to hear from you.
Can you hear me, Amity?
I sure can. Thanks.
Good. It worked. Well, my name is Carolyn Tenaglia, and I am with the Pennsylvania Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. I'm a regional ombudsman. And we actually had a situation like this in my region with one of my counties. And I'd like to just share with you how we got this resolved. We have the PEER program here in Pennsylvania where we provide some special training to the residents to be better advocates for themselves. And we had a group meeting of peers from several facilities in this one county, and one group was having a situation very similar to the situation here in Stony Brook. So what they did was another facility that had a much better dining situation, setup system, invited the administrator and resident council representatives from the problem nursing home to come and experience dining at their facility and see how they fixed things, how they did things. And it was very successful. The administrator really, after that luncheon, was really agreeable to making some changes and worked with the administrator from the other facility to get ideas on how that was changed. So I thought that was a really unique approach, and it was all initiated by the residents. So I just wanted to share that with you on the call today.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. And that is an excellent example of just the type of resident involvement and resident-initiated complaint resolution that we were considering. So that's a great idea. Thank you so much for sharing the success. Okay, I see that Jerry has his hand raised. Jerry, if you'll unmute, hitting *7. And go ahead.
There, are we clear?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm the ombudsman here in Wauseon, Ohio, with a nursing home that is attached to a hospital. Our food is prepared at the hospital and then brought through the underground lines and transferred over to the nursing home and then is delivered to the residents. But we were having a problem of the food being delivered, and it was warm, but before it made the residence room, it was getting cold. So we sat with the council president and with the staff of the kitchen, the head staff of the kitchen and the dietary, and they said, well, their excuse was basically, well, we're short on help, and we're trying to do double duty. So we, explained to them that this, of course, is not the resident's fault. The resident deserves to have warm food. We suggested that they would realign their shifting of their help and bring in a person possibly 1 hour earlier on that particular shift, and their sole job is to deliver food, not to change bedpans or anything else during that time, strictly deliver the food. For 71 residents, it has made a tremendous amount of compatibility. residents are happy, and so we feel as though that it really didn't cost the company any money. It was just reshuffling. So we feel as though that's one approach to take a look at.
Great. Great idea. Thank you, Jerry. I would agree with you that that's a good approach, and it definitely worked on the actual service delivery and the logistics of serving food.
So unmute
your line. You can hit *6.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so thanks for those great examples. I'm going to go to the next slide and review just some common resolution strategies. And when I say common, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with those resolution strategies. It just simply means they may be the go-to first action when you receive a complaint like this. So it's maybe a traditional approach to it. And then I'm going to share perhaps some culture change practices and principles that could be used to also approach resolution to this issue and perhaps bring some more resident direction into it. So this chart obviously is not all-inclusive. It's just to give you some highlights. So I'm sure that afterwards, if you have some great ideas, please email those to us and we can add to it and move some things around. We appreciate your feedback. So to go over some common resolution strategies, very similar to what Carolyn and Jerry said, seek permission to attend the resident council meeting. Listen to the resident's concerns regarding dining. Encourage the resident council to invite the dietary manager to their meetings in order to discuss these issues. Perhaps what was happening before is they would just lodge the complaint, then the complaint would be passed down to the dietary manager, but perhaps the dietary manager never heard personally from the residents about how much dining means to them and their specific concerns. Provide information regarding resident rights, and of course, this actually was used in a few facilities I'm aware of where residents initiated a petition regarding dining, that they weren't happy with their dining and that they wanted some actual resolutions to their concerns. And that went to the administrator and then went up the chain to their corporate office, and that definitely made some change. So sliding over to the other side of the chart, looking at some culture change practices and principles, it's just another step to expand this. So as an ombudsman, perhaps you could speak with residents and the facility staff about forming a dining committee, which would include residents and staff, to not just discuss these immediate concerns, but look at future planning, look at future menus, look at the system of dining and how it works or doesn't work, and really have some resident direct input to that planning. Discuss different dining styles. Just like Carolyn mentioned, showing the other administrator and residents how it could be done really helps. So carrying in your pocket and in your folder whenever you go to these facilities some list of best practices and examples of, say, dining with menus, having open dining hours, having a super salad buffet or family-style dining. We've even heard of facilities that have continuous dining hours, which simply means it's almost open at least for snacks and then major meals and sandwiches throughout the day. Ask the facility if they've ever solicited formal feedback from the residents in the form of a survey or a questionnaire. To really bring in some culture change practices, perhaps have a learning circle to discuss dining experience. Not just dining experience at the facility, but asking the residents what dining meant to them when they were at home. How could we make it more individualized and make it more like the experience that they enjoy? Ask residents to submit personal recipes of their own and then vote on those recipes for the staff to cook those recipes. And then you could even highlight the resident that shared that and why the resident thinks that recipe is so important. And those ideas could go on and on. Encourage the facility to start a resident vegetable garden, and that would be a great activity for the residents as well as some good food. If you'll please mute your line using *6. Thank you. And then you could incorporate cooking into activities. There's a lot of facilities out there that include residents in baking bread and making cookies and other items like that to bring cooking and baking back to the residents if they liked that part of the of living in the community. So those are just some ideas to consider and perhaps make it more individualized, more resident-focused and directed, and hopefully make some long-term change so you're not revisiting the same complaint every 2 weeks. Okay, Sarah?
Thanks, Amity. So now we want to shift to case number two that we sent, and it's a slightly different kind of resident as well as situation. Ms. Young is a 42-year-old resident with multiple sclerosis living in Baywater Nursing Home. Prior to needing 24-hour nursing care and moving into Baywater, Ms. Young worked as a physician's assistant. The administrator, Mr. Brooks, calls you to discuss a pending discharge notice for Ms. Young. Mr. Brooks claims Ms. Young is violating the right to privacy of other residents by getting involved in their complaints. Mr. Brooks claims that Ms. Young often tells the staff that she is more knowledgeable than they are and that they should stop making mistakes. He states that the nursing staff feels threatened by her and do not want to assist her or to provide care. Mr. Brooks also says that Ms. Young is particularly close to a nurse on staff. Occasionally, Ms. Young complains openly about how Mr. Brooks manages the nursing home and treats his staff. Mr. Brooks says he and his staff have spoken with Ms. Young about getting involved in other residents' complaints, about her relationship with the staff, and about her personal complaints, but they cannot meet her needs and have to issue a discharge notice. So I would love it if several of you would raise your hand and give us some ideas about how you could use culture change principles in addressing this case. So who has an idea? Stick up your hand and would love to have you get the ball rolling. Okay, we have one or two people now with some ideas. Patty, if you would unmute your line and share your ideas, and then we will go to some of the other people who have ideas also.
Hi, this is Patty from Texas. I was thinking first and foremost that we can work to influence the provider, the administrator, to stop viewing this resident's expertise as a liability and as a problem. And that if Mr. Brooks could start to see that acknowledging her expertise, her intelligence and her work experience in the past, and stop kind of battling over it, that I guess I could see that as a major, an important step towards resolution.
Okay, thanks. And that really gets at the heart of building on individual strengths and what they have to contribute versus seeing sometimes a strength and labeling it as a problem to be solved or stopped. So thanks for that. Jerry, you had your hand up, and then we've got a couple of other people with ideas to jump in. Okay. Jerry, if you'll unmute your line.
Are we on?
Yes.
Okay. I had, through my life, I've been had different positions, and one was mayor of our city. And this correlates with the same type of deal. The employees would have a problem, and our first, they knew when they come to my office, when they brought a question or a complaint, they also was given 24 hours to share a solution, their solution. The lady that just spoke a minute ago, that's very valuable because a lot of the residents has hidden knowledge. And you have got to be so careful that you don't get them to the point they say, well, they even called me to tell me how to run the place. But we put them in a meeting with the people they're having concerns with and say, will you please explain how you would do it if you were running it and you were in charge? What would be your solution? And we found that this diminishes the severity of the complaint, and it seems to changes the tone of everybody there, and then they start working together. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's gets back around to some of the things we were talking about, as you pointed out, of pulling people together in a meeting and asking the resident what are some ideas you have and what would be a solution, which is really important. Okay, I'd like to call on Manetta next. I believe your hand's been up a while. If you will unmute your line and share your idea, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Okay. I like the idea of looking at this problem as a resident with great assets. And in Pennsylvania, our peer program would be something I'd want to discuss with the administrator to possibly train this resident, as well as others, on to how to recognize the importance of the staff's view, as well as learn how to better strategize her approaches so that she can get a lot more results. How to get better results with honey rather than, you know, without honey.
Right.
I think the training of peers, you know, this resident along with others would be a great step in maximizing this resident's assets, which are really being wasted at this point.
Okay,
she can work with
the resident. You're suggesting bringing in a program that works very well in giving residents tools and helping them be more effective in communicating with staff, as well as the peer program also helps staff recognize the strengths of residents. So if that's one possible solution that could help not only this resident but other residents in the facility. And it's there again, it's building on strengths. Okay, thank you very much. Evelyn, you've had your hand up a little while. If you would unmute your line, please.
Hey, how are you doing, Sarah? Amity, this is Karen. I'm with Evelyn.
Great.
We are enjoying the conference. One of the things that I find is a problem is taking your resident seriously. Every resident deserves a voice, and that's part of what we're trying to do in culture change, so to speak. And you have to start with baby steps, I guess, with something very simple that this resident would be able to do that would not be part of a lack of confidentiality, or just some little something that makes her feel important, because most of our residents, I find, feel like they have nothing to give or nothing to offer anymore. And if there's some little something in that facility that this individual can be responsible for, it doesn't have to be a big thing, but to enable her to feel like she's still giving to her community, giving to the people around her, and channeling, all this deals with being able to channel these things. And that's what's so hard for ombudsman, because we like to jump in there and get it done right now, you know. But it just takes time, and I see in-service training as being a part of this for the staff, for the administration, for even family councils. So there has to be some type of understanding in giving the residents a voice in our facilities. And if there's some little task that this lady can feel good about doing, whether it's, making a round with a nurse, and not, you know, there have to be guidelines, but just have something that makes her feel important. Does that make sense?
It does, and thank you very much for that, Karen. It's very similar to what we've talked about, but you had some other ideas thrown in there as well. But it goes back to what are the strengths of the resident? How can you build on those? How can she have something to do that's meaningful and acknowledges her expertise? how can she effectively communicate with staff and vice versa, and how can the administrator begin to see the resident as an individual with unique strengths as opposed to someone who's kind of an irritant from his management perspective. What I'd like to do, and I know several others have ideas as well, but in order to get through this and have some time for open discussion, I want to move to the next slide, which is similar to the one that Amity showed you after the first one. It kind of gives you an old way or typical way and a way with some ideas in it for how to incorporate some culture change practices or principles in working on this particular issue. So if you look over on the left side, common ombudsman resolution strategies, some of these are ones that you've mentioned a little bit. Providing information, well, that's a core piece of your responsibilities to provide education to lots of different people and information. And obviously you record those contacts for your federal NORS report as well. So you would be providing information. And then talking with the administrator about discharge rights and residence rights. You've talked about meeting with staff and the resident and also identifying if other residents even want this resident involved and trying to deal with their issues. So typical ombudsman practice would be, okay, what's the piece around residence rights? How do you put a stop on the discharge discussion until you can have some other remedies in place? How do you get the right people in the room talking about things? And obviously, what do other residents want? Are they going to this person for their resolution? If you look over on the culture change principles side, the first one that is listed on this slide is to identify what's meaningful to the resident and encourage staff to meet those needs. It's what you've all suggested when you've made your comments. Who is this person? What does she have to offer? What's a strength to build upon and an asset versus something to try to rein in? The peer program has been mentioned already. Is the resident involved in the resident council? In what way can her voice be even more effective? Can she be heard and then have an official response back? Are there other younger residents in the facility? And if so, do they have any common interest with Ms. Jung? What's the facility doing to meet the needs across the board of residents of all ages and various kinds of needs and expertise? Another one is to encourage an open dialogue between Mrs. Young and the direct care staff. To find out more, obviously, about what's been going on and the allegations, but also what's being done to really make that communication effective. Is it only this one staff person that goes to her, or if she's trying to tell others how to do their job or that they don't know how to do their job, what's a better, more productive way to channel that? Involve her in staff training from a resident perspective. That's similar to one on the other side where it talks about providing information, maybe meeting with people to discuss the resident's needs, but here again, maybe let the resident have a more upfront role in explaining her needs in an ongoing training program with staff. And is there some way to really give her a meaningful role within the facility but also out in the community? Some facilities have individual residents who are volunteering as hospice volunteers. Other facilities have different kinds of volunteer programs where residents take a very active role, just as a volunteer in the community would. So what are some ways to really have meaningful activities for someone like Mrs. Young in the facility, and is the facility really engaged in trying to make that happen? So you see basically the right-hand column for ombudsman practice with culture change principles embedded is even more looking at resident direction and creating the communication linkages between resident and staff and looking at building on strengths. Those kinds of things are implied in the common resolution strategies, but in the ideas on the culture change side, it's just a little more fine-tuned, if you will, and maybe a broader range of approaches that you might try that would really get at who is this individual, how can we meet their needs, and how can this person have a meaningful life that contributes to others and meets her needs too. Amity, I think you are going to take us into looking at a few other dimensions of how do you really use culture change in your daily ombudsman work.
Yes, thank you, Sarah. As we mentioned a little earlier, we know your plates are full. So oftentimes when we discuss culture change with ombudsmen, ombudsmen voice concerns about how are they, what if they focus on culture change, will it detract from other chronic issues in these facilities? However, if you really think about it, you're already addressing chronic issues and complaints. And perhaps if a different approach was used, some of these complaints could have at least longer-term resolution, if not long-term. So I want to go to the next slide, which is really just for your information, because I was shocked in collecting information for this presentation and prior presentations when I looked at the NORS data, which is the National Ombudsman Reporting System data. I looked at the top 10 complaints for the last 5 years, and not there were several, if you'll look at the top 10 that are listed, all but two of the top 10 complaints were exactly the same for 5 years. So I think that very clearly states that we are dealing with chronic issues and that perhaps introducing new resolution strategies maybe will make some longer-term changes and resolution to these complaints. So I found out further in digging deeper into the data that the top three complaints for 5 years have not only been exactly the same, they've been in the exact same order for 5 years, meaning that the number one complaint for the last 5 years is F41, failure to respond to requests for assistance, otherwise known very commonly as lack of response to call lights. So I'm sure that's not surprising to you based on what you deal with every day. So to get back into some kind of engaging activities, we would like to ask another poll question. Again, remember that these answers in the next poll question are not all-inclusive. It's just an idea of what common responses may be. So consider how you commonly respond to complaints regarding call lights, and let's answer the next question. What is your common resolution strategy regarding call lights? And you can click on one of those answers. We'll wait for a few more people to respond, and then we'll skip to the results. Okay, great. So let's see what we have here. It looks like the majority of respondents would speak with the charge nurse or the DON, and then after that would speak with other residents on the hallway to see if they're having similar concerns. And then a good tactic that's always been used with ombudsmen would be to turn on the call light yourself and wait for the response so you can kind of test it out yourself and actually have immediate proof about a response to a call light. So I want to kind of approach this a different way, asking some questions that delve a little bit deeper, not just about the logistics of call lights, but what do call lights and the response to call lights actually mean to the residents that the staff are serving? So, for example, whenever residents are asked what they usually want most of all in long-term care, the response, which you may be familiar with, is not quality care. It's actually quality of life, and that starts out with solid, good relationships with staff and other residents. A report called Turnover Reinterpreted interviewed caregivers, so direct care staff, and asked the CNAs, what does good caregiving mean to you? And they defined good caregiving as based on the establishment and maintenance of good relationships with the residents. And then, of course, if you draw in culture change with one of the fundamental pioneer principles is that relationship is the fundamental building block of a transformed culture. So I say all that to say that relationships with residents and staff can actually have an impact on call light response times, and we'll get to that in another slide. So So when you're looking at these complaints, oftentimes we need to ask, what exactly is the root cause? So what is the resident's routine? Do the staff actually know when the residents use the call lights the most? And I'm talking, if this is an issue that's going on in one particular hallway, you know, is there a trend in that hallway when call lights are going off the most? Or with this one particular individual, is there a particular time that that individual uses the call light and needs assistance the most during the day? They need to identify that routine, therefore providing individualized care. What's the most common request for help? Perhaps some of the requests may be very simple. A study was done in a hospital about what the most common request for help was, and they were hospital patients asking for blankets. Now, that may not correspond directly to a nursing home or assisted living facility, but perhaps if they evaluate what the requests are, they may see a pattern. For instance, they may see that people are asking for more water or more fluids or more snacks, and so then they could increase the number of times that they actually make rounds with fluids and snacks, and that would decrease the number of call light requests. So can staff anticipate the residents' needs? Kind of the same approach. Figure out what the residents need, and you will not know that unless you know the residents' routine and therefore know what they need individually. And do residents actively participate in their care plans in order to voice these concerns and voice their needs? Is the facility going on their schedule or the resident's schedule? For instance, this is when culture change can play directly into call light response. Is there a rigid morning schedule, or do residents wake as they wish? It has been kind of common sense or standard practice once facilities implement waking as you wish schedules, the call light requests in the morning have declined, and the staff are less stressed because they're not running around trying to provide the exact same care, wake up residents, get them dressed, get them in their wheelchairs, and get them ready for meals all at the same time. So they're actually honoring the residents' preferences and making it easier on their staff schedule. Do shower schedules honor resident preferences? Same kind of idea. Another root cause issue would be, is there, when you speak with staff about call lights, a common refrain from an administrator, well, if they're being honest, may just be that they don't have enough staff and they have high turnover. Well, then I think that would be an opportunity for you as an ombudsman to seize and latch onto and share with them information about consistent assignment. There are many benefits to consistent assignment. They're not all listed here, but to highlight some of them, with consistent assignment, meaning that the same staff are assigned to the same residents instead of rotating everyone around, they have a better understanding of the residents' routine. Therefore, they generally provide better care. They have better relationships between the staff and the residents because they actually have time to spend with those residents and they get to know them over time instead of being rotated out. And there's increased staff and resident satisfaction, therefore less staff turnover, and probably less use of call lights because those staff know the resident's routine. Another question to ask would be, why are call lights being ignored? Are they turning them off, coming into the room, saying they'll be right back, and they never come back? Or is a charge nurse or nurse at the desk turning the call light on and never responding? So who usually responds to call lights? Do nurses respond to call lights, or do they usually say, that's not my job, I'll wait for Sally the CNA to come and address that? Well, then that would be a time to encourage the staff to promote a teamwork of response and direct care involvement in all decisions. And it may be a good idea to share the resident's perspective of what call lights actually mean to them, how that could potentially be their lifeline when they need it. And maybe ask the staff, whenever they're having in-services, about call lights and reminders about call lights, to invite a resident in to share the resident perspective about what it means to them. And that may be more meaningful hearing it from the resident than hearing it from an ombudsman or another staff person. I jumped ahead of myself. So that actually brings us to our question, answer, and discussion section before we get to our closing. So we have several options for you to ask questions. If we've received questions through the chat line, we can respond to those, and I'll ask Lori if you could chat, send me a chat message and let me know if we've received any that we need to respond to, or you can raise your hand and ask questions that way, and then we can call on you and ask you to unmute your line. So feel free to ask any questions that you have, or if you want to share best practices, or if you have questions about what you've heard today, et cetera. Oh, great. I see two hands. Let's start with Janet. Is it Janet Payne? If you'll unmute your line hitting *7 and go ahead and talk.
Yes, this is Janet Payne. I am particularly interested in the dining experience as it relates to culture change. One of my biggest challenges is dealing with the, in older facilities, that multi-purpose room that serves as a dining room, serves as an activities room, serves as a snack room, serves, it's a multi-purpose room. So in creating a very a specific and enjoyable dining experience separate from all the other functions of this room, I would like some comments or ideas on how to meet this particular challenge in these facilities.
Thank you, Janet. That's an excellent question, and I'm sure that a lot of people can sympathize with you and understand how it is dealing with older facilities that do not have separate dining and activities areas. My first comment is there's, I'll follow up with you as well as everybody else on this call when we send out the email letting you know that this information is posted. I'll also send you to links on our website that talk specifically about the dining experience, because it wasn't this most recent Resident Rights Month, but the one prior, I believe, if I remember correctly, that specifically addressed dining regarding resident rights and choice and even culture change. So there's a lot of information out there. Secondly, I have seen older, just personally, I've seen older facilities that have just a dining area, and that's what they use for activities, but they were still able to personalize it and make it more perhaps meaningful by decorating it like a restaurant. They had actual table linens. They did have laminated menus and that had some mainstays that they could order, but then other options rotated throughout. So basically there are alternatives, you know, sandwiches and other alternatives and soups were mainstays, and then the regular menu was handed out to the residents as they were seated at the table. And this facility was not only really old, it also didn't have very much money, and they were able to implement a lot of those changes and making it more personal. I know that doesn't address your question specifically. Does anyone have any input that they would like to share specifically to Janet's question before we move to the next one?
I have an idea. This is Connie from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Go ahead, Connie.
I have a facility that does the same thing. But what they do, and they don't have a lot of money, it's a small facility, they own, and they change the tablecloths from dinner to activities to whatever's going on in that room. They have different tablecloths. They change the centerpieces. They, at dinner time, they put chair covers over the chairs. So they make it, whatever the activity that's going on or whatever's going on in that room, they make the ambiance fit the activity.
Great. Thanks, Connie. And did you have a question as well? Connie,
no,
did you have a
question?
Oh, you were just, okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see here. Another chat that just came in, and if you'll excuse our pauses, I'm just trying to make sure I capture everything. Patty in Texas, oh, great idea, said, regarding dining question in old facilities, some facilities converted unused bedrooms and offices to smaller dining rooms. So those could even be used, I assume, not only for residents, but perhaps whenever residents have family members in or friends to visit with them or special occasions. Great idea. Thank you, Patty. Okay, and let's go to Carolyn. Carolyn, you have your hand raised, if you'll go ahead and unmute your line.
Well, I was just going to add that the experience we've had it seems that baby steps work best when you're trying to convince facilities to make some changes. In a situation like she described with the dining, what we've tried to do is break the process down. You know, the ultimate goal would be all these wonderful things, but where could we start with something simple and something that isn't too costly or too threatening to the administrator? And, you know, you get that, you kind of get your foot in the door, and then you build on that gradually. And sometimes that's one of our biggest challenges with our ombudsman is patience, and even the residents, you know, because they're eager to see some significant change. And sometimes it's just better to work in these smaller incremental steps. And then that just seems to be the way we have more success. So that's what I was going to share.
Thank you, Carolyn. And to kind of tack on to that, if you don't mind, that's baby steps and breaking it down to the fundamentals is actually exactly what we're talking about today. Not just introducing these large scheme changes such as the dining routine, but every single time that you're talking about resident rights and complaints, you could draw it into culture change so it doesn't seem so overwhelming to the staff when you're speaking with them, or even your volunteers when you're training them about culture change, that really, as Sarah discussed in her slides at the beginning, there is a direct correlation between resident rights and culture change. Culture change is rather an extension of that and growing it broader and spreading it out and making it less institutionalized. So I think breaking it down is really important. Thank you, Carolyn. Okay, if we can go to Jerry. Jerry, if you'll unmute your line, please.
Just a real quick note. We found at the one nursing home, they give the people a menu in the morning at breakfast for the next day's selection of food. This way, they may not have a large selection, but they'll have two or three items to choose from. They pick out their breakfast, their lunch, and their supper, and it puts them in charge, and they are going to get what they ask for, and this makes the people feel psychologically rather than better than somebody saying, here's what you're going to eat today.
Very true. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate that. And when you think about it, a lot of hospitals provide menus, and if a hospital, which is generally larger than a nursing facility, can do that, then I would imagine a nursing facility could implement a similar system. Any other questions? Oh, I see a comment from Jim Tucker. Thank you, Jim. Is from Ohio, and he said, as a retired administrator, he used to occasionally sit down for a meal with the residents, which I think is really valuable. Thank you for saying that, Jim, and I think that's, as an ombudsman, that's something we could ask, especially when there's a lot of complaints about food. If the staff ever dine with residents, not only to chat with them and make it more social of an experience, but to taste the food, see the experience, you know, live it personally. Any other questions? If not, then I'll go ahead with another one we read through the chat. It said that on one of the first slides, it mentioned something to the effect that culture change includes addressing how ombudsmen communicate with resident families and providers. Can you talk a little bit about how we should change our communication approach? I touched on that briefly when we were talking about making sure that as ombudsmen, we are truly the leaders and we are modeling behavior to providers. And when I say I mean you guys, that we are modeling communication that is resident-directed, resident-centered and person-first, like that chart that was a few slides back. But another way that we could change how we communicate and improve communication is really come across as an educator when you're dealing with these complaints. Whenever you're sharing information of culture change and working hard at wording your complaint resolution suggestions to include information about culture change. That was really what I meant by that comment, and I hope that makes sense. If not, send another chat message or raise your hand. Thank you very much. We had another message that was a quick idea for the whole dilemma of having the same dining room as an activity room, and that a facility always made sure to put away the activity stuff that they used in plastic tubs that were hidden behind a curtain so the dining room just looked just like a dining room when it was ready for everyone to come down and eat. Thanks for that quick input. Okay. Any other questions? Comments?
Emily, this is Sarah. I'm also wondering if anybody on the call has an example of a way that they've used some of these principles in an advocacy situation. It could be very brief, but just an example about how you've mentioned a culture change approach in trying to seek resolution on behalf of a resident, or have talked with a group of residents about how to promote certain kinds of things that are part of the culture change process or ideas. If you have, raise your hand and share your idea with others or your good practice.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, I see that Carolyn has her hand raised. If you'll go ahead and unmute your line.
I just wanted to share what we do here in PA with the National Resident Rights Month, the theme. Every year, our local ombudsman takes the theme to the residents, and they actually prepare in-service training for facility staff. So you had mentioned earlier in the call about how it would be good, for instance, with the call bell situation, to have the residents let the staff know what it's like from their perspective to be on the other end of that call bell. And we've been doing this for a couple years, and so we've been trying to gauge staff reaction to the residents' presentations. And we're hearing from staff that it is really impactful, and it actually helps to forge the beginning of a better working relationship. So the staff perceive the residents differently, as more capable and as a resource and a source of information. Initially, when we tried this the first year, the residents were very skeptical and they were apprehensive, and you know, they didn't feel like they could do it. But over time, they've become more confident, actually give us the material and the input to develop our materials, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. I just wanted to, you know, expand on your thought there and let other people know that it really is worth that initial investment of time. It's a wonderful tool.
Thank you very much. Before I move along to a few more closing remarks and a review of resources, I wanted to let you know that a few of our callers have mentioned the PEER program, and the PEER program is also mentioned in one of our slides, and that we do have contact information to share with you if you're interested in that, and we will include that whenever I send out the email letting you know that all these materials are posted online. So just wanted to give you a heads up. Oh, I see that Connie has her hand raised. Connie, if you'll go ahead and unmute your line, and this will be the last person we can take before we move along.
I was an example, you know, like the case study where the lady was, you know, the administrator thought she was in everybody's business. And going on the resident's strength, I have a resident that he is a retired sports announcer, and they were having a lot of trouble with his behaviors and acting out with other residents and not wanting to take showers and things like that. And I said, what does he like to do? And they said, well, he's a retired sports announcer. I said, let him announce the sports over the PA on Friday, the local, you know, school's basketball scores. And his behaviors diminished because they gave him a job to do, and he felt important.
Yep. I think that's a perfect example. Thank you so much for sharing that. And that draws us back to exactly what we were talking about in that case study, working from the resident's strengths, not their weaknesses. And, you know, we could go on a separate training about care planning and looking at the strengths opposed to weaknesses, but that's what culture change is all about, drawing it back to the residents, their interests, what's meaningful, and what their strengths are. And behaviors, actually, that's a great word for me to add to my resident-centered chart, behaviors is one of those words that when we're communicating with staff, that you could turn around and make them see that it's not a behavior. It's something that that individual is trying to express because they're not getting something in their life in that community, whether it's care or whether they're bored or, you know, need something that makes them feel meaningful and useful again. So let me check my chat. I saw a couple more things come in, and then we'll move along. Peggy, thanks for mentioning this. She said, I remind residents that they are not complaining but correcting so they don't feel like they're bothering staff. Sometimes culture change has to be directed at the residents themselves. They need to know that they are the ones that truly initiate change, very much so. And Marianne, are there resources on helping ombudsmen work with staff to identify root causes? Yes and no. We do have some resources of that nature. We plan on developing some more information like Sarah talked about at the beginning of the presentation. We will have another webinar in the near future, or at least in this year, about how individual programs are weaving culture change into their daily work, whether that's actually training, the initial training of ombudsmen, or other activities that they're doing. So I think that that would be where we would see that information come out in the near future. So good question. And I'm missing a question. Okay. And, oh, thanks, Karen. She said, in Alabama, we're doing the virtual dementia tour to help the staff in our facilities put themselves in the residents' shoes. Thank you for sharing, Karen. Okay, so I wanted to go back to one slide. Right here. There we go. Culture change is systems advocacy. Systems advocacy, as you know, and was addressed at the very beginning of the presentation, is also a responsibility of the ombudsman program, whether that be a state ombudsman or a local ombudsman. So I wanted to give you a few quick tips on how you could actually, as a local ombudsman or state ombudsman, start looking at systems advocacy from a culture change perspective. For example, do an analysis similar to what we did for this presentation and identify your top five complaints in either your region or your state, or if you're a volunteer on this call, whatever your assigned facilities may be, or if you're a staff ombudsman with, you know, not your entire region but a few facilities. Identify what those top five complaints are and then sit down and figure out how you could perhaps use culture change practices or principles to address those complaints. Maybe if you have a complaint in common across the board, you could be proactive in sharing information about dining practices, if that's what it is, or consistent assignment, if that's what it is, about call lights or attitudes from the staff members and developing relationships with the staff and residents. So be proactive. Analyze your complaints and try to apply some culture change practice and principles to address those. And how could you develop a systems advocacy plan to respond to those complaints and promote resident-directed care, providing in-service training for the staff about culture change and resident rights and how those link together? Work directly with resident and family councils about culture change, resident rights, and their complaints and how they can become advocates for themselves. So in closing, seize daily opportunities to incorporate culture change principles and encourage resident-directed care, whether it be in the complaint resolution process, in regular discussions you have regarding resident rights, in consultations with facility staff, residents, and families, in your language when you're communicating with residents and staff and family members, or systemic advocacy. And the resource information, this will, like we said before, the recorded webinar as well as the supplemental materials will all be posted on our website within the month after this webinar. So all these links, you don't have to write them down. They will be available for you. If you'll notice the last bullet point, though, on this slide, it says that one of our major resources, it's you. You need to share your success and activities with NORC so we can share it with your colleagues. We really value the input that you provide to us and we like to see the successes and activities that you have out in your state and or region. We wanted to provide a few screenshots of our website. It may be small on your computer, but I hope you can see it, just to kind of walk you through where you can find some of this information. If you look on the left-hand side, issues is highlighted in green, and then there's a red arrow pointing towards culture change. So you would just go to issues and then click on culture change, and that would take you to several resources specifically about the basics of culture change as well as culture change activities from other ombudsman programs throughout the country. Another area where you can find some resources would be under, specifically under ombudsman support. Click on that on the left-hand side, and then you'll see several different categories: program management, program promotion, ombudsman training, systemic advocacy, and volunteer management. And I highlighted ombudsman training because if you click on that, you would actually find some in-services specifically related to culture change that are already created that you could download onto your computer and adapt as necessary and take out to your facilities and train or use it with your volunteers. And there's other training manuals and other information in that training section. But specifically related to culture change, there are some culture change modules as well as an in-service. I also wanted to point out that on the consumer voice side of our website, if you look on the left-hand side, there's resident-directed care button. And if you click on that, there's a lot of information about resident-directed care and culture change and how to involve residents and family in that activity. And last but not least, here is our slide with our contact information. We will send out immediately as soon as this webinar closes, there will be a link to a questionnaire, and we would like your feedback about this webinar today. So it'll have a link directly to a SurveyMonkey questionnaire. If you could answer those questions for us, that would be invaluable as we plan for future training and webinars. I also wanted to ask that specifically on the questionnaire, we do ask what information you would like about culture change. So if you, this hopefully triggered some ideas for you and you'd like some additional information to go a little bit deeper into this, then please let us know specifically what that would be and how that would look. So we appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Are there any other, we do have a couple more minutes, so if there's any other questions from the closing that I missed or anything that you want to ask, please raise your hand.
Yes, this is Nick. Can you hear me?
Nick? Yeah, I can. Thanks.
Yes, this is Nick Monreal in San Antonio, and I want to comment on something that Patty, our state ombudsman in Texas, made a comment recognizing, I think in case two, recognizing the, you know, real-world experience within long-term care. So often we tend not to use the expertise around us. And one of the things that hasn't been mentioned is we have the opportunity to work with family councils and resident councils. Within culture change, I would like to see the creation of a culture change council, which would be a combination of both family resident councils, including and inviting regulatory participation and facility participation, to come up with some real goals and objectives that would create a better resident-centered environment in long-term care. I just wanted to add that to the bill.
Thanks, Nick. And Nick, before you mute, do you mean a culture change council for each facility that would include residents, family, and staff in that facility?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I think that's an excellent idea. And I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because that is one of our resources that I will send out to you after this webinar. We have a very quick tip sheet about no-cost or low-cost ideas to implement culture change. And one of those ideas in order to involve residents in this movement was exactly that, creating a culture change committee or council.
Excellent.
Within a facility. So that's perfect. Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Thank you for this opportunity. It was an excellent conference. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Good to hear from you, Nick. Okay, that looks like to be the last question or comment that we have. Again, thank you so much for participating today. If we did miss a question or a comment or you think of something as soon as you hang up, please let us know.
Okay.
Just shoot us an email and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Okay, have a great day.
Thank you. Please stand by.